It's Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina in for Rob Ferret. You're with us on the Ideas Network. You can grill brats and burgers and other meats, but we're not stopping there. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll talk about how to grill vegetables, fruits, bread, even dessert. First, when you think of the word endowment, you might think of multi-million dollar funds for a big-name university. Well, an endowment called the Gresham Scholarship Fund is making headlines for reaching the milestone of $1 million, and it's for graduating high school seniors in this village of less than 1,000 people. We're talking about a community that came together to make college more accessible for kids who grow up there. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you live in Gresham or another community that has a college scholarship fund? Did a scholarship fund help you or your kids afford higher education? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Bob Klopke started the Gresham Scholarship Fund. He was the principal of Gresham High School for 14 years, and he joins us now. Bob, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
The scholarship fund hit the million-dollar mark last year, but this has been 20 years in the making. Where did the idea come for this?
Well, quite honestly, it's a little bit of a copycat situation. I was part of a school district called Shawano Gresham 20 years ago, and in Shawano, they started up a Dollars for Scholars program, and it seemed to be going well, and I envied them, but I also had three daughters in my school, and being a small town, I didn't want it to look as though I was trying to find a way to finance my own kids' education. So
sure.
I waited a bit, and when the last one graduated, then I started sending out some letters to people in the community to see if we could get together and get something going. And it all fell into place little by little. Got lucky that way, I guess. But the community has been a strong supporter. I know your intro said that we were less than 1,000. We're actually less than 600 in the village of Gresham. And, of course, we include some of the surrounding area as well. And,
sure.
And our graduates over the years have been good supporters of this program. So,
how does the endowment work? Who's eligible for these scholarships?
Well, we've set up criteria and a simple application. It's really only about one page long, although nowadays, the last few years anyway, it's been electronic, and so the students fill it out online for us, but it probably takes them 15, 20 minutes to fill it out. One of our board members likes to remind them that, you know, you can take that 15 or 20 minutes, so multiply whatever the award is times 3 or 4, and that's how much money they're making per hour by getting it filled out. Right now, this year, we're awarding $3,250 per student. So if it takes them 20 minutes to fill it out, you're getting close to $10,000. And it's nice.
That's not a bad rate per hour, for sure. And this is, especially with the short form, I mean, this is eligible to a lot of people who might not have the skills or the time even to sit down and write, you know, essays for a bunch of different small scholarships or something like this. It really is accessible, right?
Correct. And we've kept it that way. We started off with the Dollars for Scholars program, and we broke off from them, and we set up our own situation here. We've got our own 501c3 designation with the IRS, and so any money that we have donated to us is tax deductible. And really the reason that we broke off was that we wanted to keep it simple. We wanted that application process to be fairly easy. We work with the Community Foundation of the Fox Valley region, and they actually evaluate the scholarship applications for us, and they take care of that so that we don't have the small town politics getting in there and somebody thinking that that somebody's getting unfair treatment or whatever. It's they're located in Appleton and they're far enough away that hopefully anything that they do in terms of judging the applications is fair and equitable.
Sure. So students have to have at least a 2.0 grade average. They're seniors. They plan to pursue post-secondary education. When you took this idea, or even now when this idea comes in front of people, how did they respond when you say, you know, we have these basic requirements. We want to make sure that these kids have some money going into college. Do you want to donate?
Right. And I guess they like the simplicity of it. They like the fairness of it. Of giving all the students, or at least a large majority of the students, should qualify. The C average is lower than what would have gone through my mind, 20 years ago, as the threshold or whatever to getting a scholarship. I always tended to think of people with high grade points, but a 2-point. Is what we've set it at, and so anything from that point and up, the only catch that I would be remiss if I didn't mention is that we expect them to continue to have at least a 2-point when they first start college, and that they maintain that as a full-time student, and that's when we pay out. So they have to complete the first semester in good standing, and they have to be enrolled for the second semester as a full-time student. And, that's about it. It's pretty simple.
That's some good motivation there. We've got Chris in Adams who wants to join our conversation. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Bad dog decided to just go off in the background.
Yeah, that happens.
Muzzle time. Anyway, I grew up in New Holstein, Wisconsin, and Dr. Harry Steenbach, who discovered vitamin D and was a biology professor at the UW, grew up on a farm near there. And he set up an endowment fund so that valedictorians from my high school get a 4-year free tuition to the UW. And then there are lots of other smaller summer things for people, and I got a music one.
Oh, cool. Chris, thank you so much for sharing that story. And what I hear and what Chris is saying is that educators care enough to do the things like what you have done, Bob, and collaborate with people and bring people together to establish endowments. If people are listening and they are thinking about starting some sort of fund for their own community, what advice would you have for them?
Well, we work pretty closely with the Community Foundation of the Fox Valley region. They're located in Appleton, and they've got a full-time person that handles their thousands of scholarships for organizations and individuals. I would suggest that would be a good place to start contacting them, and they might ask to talk to Jill Muthig. She's the lady that I work closely with. But you have to set up, your own standards, your bylaws, and so on, getting yourself set as a group and having everybody on the same page is important. Over the last 20 years, we've had things that we've had to discuss and get everybody's thinking the same way so we can proceed together.
Yeah. Bob, thank you so much for explaining how you started this and created it and where it is now. We really appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Bob Klopke started the Gresham Scholarship Fund. He was the principal of Gresham High School for 14 years. Next, we'll look at college affordability broadly in Wisconsin and how President Biden's education proposals would affect the state, especially the technical college system. And you're part of this conversation. You can call 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on the president's proposal to make community college free? How much did cost factor into your decision to go to college or maybe not to go to college? You can give us a call, 800-642-1234. 1234. We've got that conversation coming up next on Central Time. This is the Ideas Network. You are listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about college affordability in Wisconsin, how our state stacks up compared to other states, how President Biden's education proposals would affect the post-secondary education system here and beyond. Your calls are welcome at 800-642-1234. How did you afford college? How have student loans helped you or maybe hurt you? Help us understand. You can share your story at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Nick Hillman is an associate professor in the School of Education and directs the Student Success through Applied Research Lab at UW-Madison. Nick, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thanks for taking the time to talk with us about it. It affects a lot of people. College tuition in Wisconsin is slightly above the national average for in-state students. How does Wisconsin stack up against other states?
We're right in the middle on a lot of these metrics. You know, when we look at our public four-year universities, as you mentioned, sort of right in the middle, our technical colleges, the two-year system in the state is also right there around the middle. And when it comes to student loan debt, we're also, a little bit below the average. But I think in many metrics, right at the average or below, it doesn't mean there aren't problems or things that could improve.
Yeah, you can interpret it as the glass half full or the glass half empty. How has college affordability here changed over the years?
Well, in all states, states appropriate money to public universities, public colleges and universities. And in a lot of states, especially after the Great Recession, they've really changed that dynamic and they have not invested as much money into state appropriations that go broadly to colleges. And so as a result, colleges are looking for revenue from other places. And a big one becomes students and tuition. And so in Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin system has had a tuition freeze for several years, I believe since 2013. And so because of that, tuition has not risen quite as quickly as it has in other states. But there are also, non-tuition expenses that oftentimes matter, that are continuing to go up. And there's also, context around, the certainty of finishing college, even though tuition might be low, you still have some uncertainties about, well, can I stick around for 4 years or five or six?
Yeah. How do the issues that you bring up apply when we think about socioeconomic divides? Because it's not equal for different people.
It is not equal for different people. That's absolutely right. And in Wisconsin, at least, thinking about high school students who are graduating from high school and they're moving into college, for those who take that path, you see those disparities start right then. In fact, they start far earlier, but you can see how this tracking occurs right from high school into college, where the majority of low-income students in Wisconsin's high schools go into the technical college system, and the majority of wealthier students or the ones who do not have economic disadvantages go to the public four-year system. And that's all and well when those two systems work together. But in Wisconsin, our two systems are completely separate. They work very hard at trying to, improve these processes and improve the sort of pathways through college by coordinating. But Wisconsin has the nation's worst transfer success rate in the country. What I mean by that is the students who start in the tech college don't finish in the four-year college. That transfer function does not work in Wisconsin. And so back to your original question, low-income students transitioning out of high school are more likely to go in the tech colleges, and that's wonderful. The tech colleges are a great asset and a great resource to the state. It also is challenging because the transfer process is extremely clunky. To use a technical term, it's very clunky in Wisconsin.
And I can see where that could be really frustrating if you are achieving a two-year degree and you want to keep going and you have higher earning potential. You know, if you keep and moving on and get a four-year degree, and then the system is just too difficult and life gets in the way.
Yeah, that is what happens. And now this is a story that happens in Wisconsin, but it's also a story that happens across the country. Students start college. Let's say that they start at a technical or a two-year college. They're working on an associate's degree for the very reasons you just described. And then for whatever reason, life happens, or college is just unaffordable or just doesn't work out for them, and the student ends up leaving college with some debt, but without a degree. And when that happens, the student now, say, has $5,000 to maybe $10,000 in student loan debt, but they don't have that boost in their earnings in the labor market. Well, this is sort of the worst of both worlds, where you've got this debt hanging over into your early life course and not a job that has the same kind of payoff for it. And because of that, a lot of students who struggle the most repaying their student loans are not the ones who have super, super high debt. Certainly, there are still struggles there, but a lot of the biggest problems in student loan debt are for these students who have relatively small debt amounts. The default rate is concentrated among the students who have just $5,000 to $10,000 in debt, and it's largely because they didn't finish and now they have debt but no degree.
President Biden has proposed that students should have free access to community college. Earlier, we talked to a former high school administrator, started a community scholarship fund. What policies are most effective to try to level that playing field and make college accessible?
Well, that's a great question, and that is exactly where the policy debates are right now. The best evidence that we have comes from some community colleges in New York and Ohio, and what they essentially do is they provide ample support services for students to not just pay for college, certainly that helps, but also to block out courses so they can take classes together. They have their programs sort of mapped out for them. They get bus passes. They have resources outside of the classroom to support their development. And so, it sometimes is very expensive on the front end to provide those services, but the reward on the back end far outweighs those costs. The public benefit is there. We just have to wait for it. So the policy conversations are oftentimes now really focused on how to build capacity, how to bring the colleges that have the least resources up to some level so that they have resources to be able to really help students complete college. And I think that that's really where the policy conversations are heading. There are some specific ways to do that that I'd be happy to talk about.
Yeah, we will have to do that in the future. Nick, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you.
Nick Hillman is an associate professor in the School of Education and directs the Student Success through Applied Research Lab at UW-Madison.